2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We are in for a continued very busy news day at 11 o'clock this morning. 1 o'clock Eastern time, the House committee convenes for yet another hearing on the January 6th insurrection. So we'll be taking you there live when that happens. We also, of course, have primary election day here in Utah, which is happening right now. We're going to have a live interview in just a moment with Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson, Dave.
Didn't the January 6th committee promise us something new? They discovered something. They had this
have a new
surprise
witness
one.
Testifying today. Yes.
All right, there you go. That starts at 11. We'll take you live there. It's 9:08. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
And here are three things that Debbie wants you to know.
Countdown three.
In about 25 minutes from now, Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson calling the show live to give us the details. On primary election day, I want to know what wait times are at the polls. Hopefully not too long, because a lot of people have already gotten their ballots and sent them back. And there's some confusion over the identification that you need to take with you. What do you have to have in hand to cast a ballot on the spot today? And by the way, her elections director already gave us a hint on Utah's Morning News. He called in and spoke with Tim Hughes live on what turnout looks like so far.
What we're hearing from the counties is they're sitting right around 30% of most of them on the Republican side. The Democratic side, I don't have a good number just because there's a few races, but I don't have that broken out yet.
Yeah, it's a big day. If there's a line, though, I'm telling you, it will shock me because so many people are voting by mail. Ballot, drop it off. I would be shocked if there's any kind of a line, any significant line. But again, there are some folks that just absolutely love, you know, going in line.
In person, yeah.
Punching it and doing it old school.
Countdown to
politics in depth in our 10 o'clock hour. We've got two candidates looking to unseat Utah Senator Mike Lee. They will be at Broadcast House live in studio with us. We've got Becky Edwards and Ali Isom live on the show on their odds and also how much money they've spent on their bids to make it out of today's primary.
So the first place you want to spend your money is on identifying the persuadable universe.
Finding the persuadable universe. I think that might feel as overwhelming as it sounds sometimes, but a lot of money was spent on this primary
election. You looked at the numbers.
I dove into the numbers, and between the three of them, over $8 million.
Whoa.
Just in the primary.
Whoa.
Launch countdown one.
Our top story, we've got ABC News' Jim Ryan standing by live right now. He's been in Texas on this tragedy in San Antonio. Now 50 people dead. Being smuggled into the United States inside a sweltering tractor trailer. Dave, I read one newspaper report that said some were sprinkled with steak seasoning, perhaps to throw off Border Patrol from the smell of humans.
No signs of water in the vehicle. It was a refrigerated tractor trailer, but there was no visible working AC unit on that rig.
I mean, just a horrific story. And Debbie, 50 people dead. What's going to happen? Because if this just falls by the wayside, if we just forget about this, if we don't use this as a moment of clarity to address the immigration problem right now, I have lost hope in our ability to deal with immigration.
Dave and Dujanovic.
The launch.
Commence.
KSL's top national story. Special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
Here's part of the headlines from the Dallas Morning News this morning. The dead include 22 Mexicans, 7 Guatemalans, and 2 Hondurans. The mayor of San Antonio.
46 individuals who are no longer with us, who had families.
46, Dave, has now turned to 50.
And there are many that are still in the hospital being treated. Jim Ryan from ABC News is live in Texas. Jim, how were these people discovered?
Quite simply, somebody walking along a road not too far from Lackland Air Force Base, Dave, heard someone crying out for help. He went to investigate, found this tractor-trailer rig sitting there, tractor and trailer sitting there alongside this road, saw that the back door was open to the trailer. People inside were so weak, so exhausted, suffering heat effects that they couldn't even get up and move. He called 911. That person did, the worker, and very soon first responders were there. So it was simply somebody stumbling across this truck. Nobody's really sure how long the truck had been there. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it was 100 degrees in San Antonio. It's been an unseasonably hot summer in San Antonio. This was at about 6 o'clock last night, and again, there's no telling how long that truck might have been there.
Jim, do you know yet, or have you... Looking to find out, how was this truck not flagged at the border by Border Patrol agents?
It's a good point. I don't think the steak seasoning had anything to do with it. Potentially, and there are two ways that this could have happened. Now, San Antonio is about 150 miles from the closest point to the border, Piedras Negras. It would go through Uvalde, in fact, and out to Piedras Negras. Most likely, though, it would have come in through Laredo, because that's along Interstate 35. I-35 is the main north-south corridor that goes from the Mexican border all the way to the Canadian border. And through Dallas-Fort Worth, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Oklahoma City, goes through major cities. And so potentially the truck was loaded up with all these people on the Mexican side of the border, somehow evaded customs and border protection, which is really, I think, almost unfathomable, because they do have dogs there and they routinely search these trucks. Another scenario is this, that these people slipped through between the border checkpoints, got across the border somehow, and then were loaded into this truck to make the trip farther north through San Antonio and then up that way. So that kind of is what, you know, this whole situation. I've covered, you know, those border checkpoints plenty, and it's hard to sneak anything past those officers.
So perhaps one possible scenario is as they individually made it past the border and then got in the truck.
Right. Wow. Right.
Jim Ryan, thank you for the update. ABC News live in Texas.
Straight ahead, let's take a closer look as to why some people are going to extreme measures like this to leave their countries. We know now they're saying that these were Mexicans, Hondurans, and Guatemalans. And Dave, it probably likely goes beyond the idea of they'll find a better life and better work here in the country, in the U.S., and goes perhaps more to this point, the wait time. The wait time to get into the U.S. legally, there's an online calculator for that. I did it today to see how long it would take me to get from Mexico into the United States legally. Let's chat about that straight ahead.
This week, we take the next step towards control of Congress. Do Democrats hold, or do voters give Republicans a new majority? Wednesday morning, be sure to listen for Utah's congressional results. And stay updated all this week. It's Decision 2022 on KSL News Radio, Utah's all-day companion for news. KSL's top national story. Special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
Let's dive into how long the legal path is to immigrate to the United States. Dave and I just got off the line with Jim Ryan of ABC News, who is standing by in Texas at this tragedy of 50 people found dead in the back of a semi-tractor trailer along the highway. What I found, Dave, could potentially explain why people are willing to pile into this semi-truck like this and just hope and pray they don't die being smuggled across the border.
No signs of water in the vehicle. It was a refrigerated tractor trailer, but there was no visible working AC unit on that rig.
Just an absolute tragedy, Debbie, as we've learned that 50 have died in San Antonio as they essentially found this tractor trailer off to the side of the road, abandoned with, again, dozens of people.
Jim Ryan telling us that they're still trying to figure out how they got into the U.S. Did the truck smuggle them in from Mexico? We know these people were from Mexico, Honduras, Guatemala. Did the truck get across the border and get past Border Patrol? Or perhaps the people who were found dead and the others who are now in the hospital managed to smuggle themselves individually across the border and then hop into this truck. But we know that this is not the first time this has happened. 2017, 39 people inside a tractor trailer, 10 dead. Go back to 2003. So what are we talking, almost 20 years ago? 19 undocumented.
Well, you used to work people. On the border.
I did.
In
Yuma, Arizona.
And this is not even including how many people have
died in the
desert trying to cross never heard of from again.
This is not a new issue. And so what I did today is it's a tragic issue every time it happens, but it's not a new one. So what I did today is I went onto a website. The federal government has a website and you can put in your information. Not my personal information, but just like what type of, what I'm looking for. So I put that I was looking for employment in the U.S. and that I wanted to process through either Texas or through California. So there's some processing centers across the United States. There's not a lot of them. I think there's 5 or 6 of them. And so I just picked Texas and California. Texas, because that's where these individuals were coming up from. So had they done it legally instead of illegally, how long would it have taken me? So coming through Texas, it would have taken me 8 months at least, probably longer. They said 80% of the cases are completed within 8 months. So that means 20% of the cases just kind of go on and on, right? But here was something I found strange. And maybe it's because...
Is this for those seeking asylum?
These are for...
Or work visas.
Work. Well, I'm looking for work.
Okay.
Employment. I was looking for... But Dave, there's a huge list of things that you can ask for. I picked for employment. So here's what was kind of odd to me is that once your application goes into the system, they said, don't call us, we'll call you. And the only time you can find out where your application is at is if you're well beyond the time period. So if you're going into a year, year and a half, maybe then you can find out. But that's the perception that I was left with as I was doing that online calculator. Then I thought, well, maybe it'll be faster coming through California. It's 9 months at least where they complete 80% of the applications. But that's kind of an average. That's a ballpark. So I wondered if we could get some perspective from our producer, Gustavo, who's from Mexico. Your family's from Mexico. Your dad is.
Yeah.
Mark, can we? Okay, we got his microphone on. There we go. Your dad, he immigrated legally in the 80s.
In the 80s, yeah.
You don't know how long it took him.
I don't know. I just know he was about 17, 18.
Years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I really don't know the story.
Yeah. But you go down to Mexico from time to time to see family,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so give us an idea of what life is like there for your family and then and for others in Mexico, Gustavo.
My family is doing okay. It's not great, but they're okay. They have a house. They have jobs. They have food. But sometimes it's really rough. And in occasions, my family sends them money, and that's how we help them out. But, I mean, if we're talking about classes, maybe they're below the middle class. Not, they're not high middle.
Upper.
Yeah, upper. Yeah, yeah.
But is there any discussion amongst family that wants to come here? Are they happy in Mexico?
So they're all happy, but I do have, and my aunt and my uncle, they got a visitor visa. And I do know that it took them a long time to get that. And they knew another couple that they were going for the same visa. They didn't get it. So it's almost like a lottery.
So it didn't really make sense.
No, yeah, because they got it, but the other two didn't get it. And they think it's like, oh, maybe it's a lottery.
Right.
And
they're maybe, drawing names out of the hat. Yeah, so like, no rhyme or reason.
Yeah, they're saying, oh, they're going to get it. They won't get it. They're going to get but I mean, I don't know.
So your aunt and uncle just had to kind of
wait
for a long time.
They had to get a lot of documentations, and they had to prove they weren't coming to work. It was only for visiting, and they went through a lot of stuff, and then they had to go to a major city in Mexico because where they're from, it's a small town like Salt Lake, so there's not an embassy there or the
process
office.
Yeah, the process. Through.
Yeah.
So Gustavo, you told me something as I was chatting with you before the show about this. That people, you know, not everybody who works in Mexico can necessarily expect to get a paycheck like we do here in the United States. Like they'll go to work for a couple of weeks and then not get a paycheck for
yeah,
it.
Yeah. So my uncle's one of them. So he works in body shop, but he doesn't get a check every Friday or every 2 weeks. It's whenever the client pays him. So, and then there's other people like in if they're mechanics or something like that, they're not working enough in a major company. It's whenever they get paid. It's not every week.
That gives us some perspective on, for example, the tragedy in San Antonio, why people become so desperate across the border.
Yeah, and this is a lot of them, a lot of the people that travel either by foot or cross the river or trailers, they're poor people that they can't get a job. They didn't complete middle school. High school, you have to pay to go to high school down there. It's not free like it's here. It's like applying for college here. So it's rough. Some people they don't even make it to middle school. It's just elementary and then they start working and it's rough. Yeah, it's rough down
there. Yeah, there's a desperation, and it's the only thing that would explain, right? I mean, piling in the back of a tractor trailer.
Not being able to breathe.
Yeah.
No food, no water.
Also, I was telling the other producer, Hunter, that there is a train that travels from southern Mexico to northern Mexico. They pile on top of that train to come to the border.
Really? Not even sitting inside the train car?
No, I was telling them. It's not an Amtrak train. It's one of those freight trains.
And they just get on top and
And help, they call and it the beast. They even made a documentary about it. Yeah. Gustavo. That's how rough it is down there in Central America.
Gustavo, thank you for sharing that perspective with us. I think it's insight that many of us had no idea was happening.
Well, and I think what shocks me and what offends me most is we've just lost 50 people.
Yeah.
I think children were involved as well. And we're going to forget about it. We're not going to address it. We had this tragedy in Uvalde, and Congress came together and passed some bipartisan legislation. They did something. And I am calling on Congress right now. Don't let this be just forgotten about. That we moved on the next day. This is a tragedy, and we have to address it. There are places where we can come together. We've got to figure it out.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com,
follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.